Hi, and welcome back to year 6 of Second Chance Cinema with MC and Spro. I'm Rudy, the review reader. Today I'll be reading the review for The Good Son by Ty Burr, published on October 1st, 1993. Our culture insists on the innocence of children. Even the expectations are proof. The Omen's Damien couldn't just be a brat, he had to be Satan. But we know better, and so does The Good Son. A nasty and rich pop thriller that looks at a child and sees the numb blandness of a future serial killer. Directed by Joseph Rubin, with the craft that made his 1987 film, The Stepfather, a B-classic, The Good Son is strangers on a train in knee pants. The key to the movie's power is that it stars a young actor with a talent to take us across an emotionally raw terrain. But that actor isn't Macaulay Culkin. Don't get me wrong, Mac is fine and spooky here, but his performance stays well within the opaque limits staked out by the Home Alone movies. It's Elijah Wood, the Good Son's real star who grabs our sympathy. As Mark Evans, sent to stay with his aunt and uncle in Maine after his mother dies, Wood balances fierce smarts and wounded sensitivity. At first, Mark holds his own with creepy cousin Henry, Culkin. They break windows, tease Henry's kid sister, standard kid stuff. But Mark quickly sees that Henry's cruelty is cold, logical, and unfathomably deep. The Good Son delivers its knuckle-gnawing set pieces with a skill that makes other thrillers look logy. When Henry pushes his ice-skating sister into the thin part of the pond, for example, the movie daringly stops in its tracks and listens to the ice below before giving away. But Rubin and his screenwriter, Ian McEwan, are most daring when they tap into something we rarely admit about childhood, where most kids learn to temper their innate sadism with ethics, some just don't. There are people who will despise the movie for that. Intentionally or not, it forces unpleasant connections to what we know about Jeffrey Dahmer's youth, for instance, or to increasingly frequent news photos of blank-faced teen killers. They'll despise it, too, because the movie presents its dark vision so well. Make no mistake, there is artistry here, not least in the film's resonant emotional undertones. In his grief, Mark becomes convinced that the spirit of his dead mom has entered his Aunt Susan, Wendy Crewson, and the Good Son develops into a tussle between him and Henry over who gets mom. Anybody with siblings will relate, but Rubin ups the Freudian ante in the staggering climax by putting Aunt Susan in a position where she has to choose. She does so, and in a way, that will hang in your mind for a long, long time. Now, here's MC and Spro to tell you why The Good Son deserves a second chance.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to season 4 of Second Chance Cinema. And I don't even need to say welcome back because it's really welcome to the very first episode of season 4 of Second Chance Cinema. I cannot believe that it has been so long since we started this celebration of friendship masquerading as a podcast. You know, I had a discussion with a friend last night. Sometimes we have movie nights where he lives in Connecticut. We'll get stoned and watch a movie at the same time, kind of like over FaceTime. And he was asking me about the podcast, and I tried to explain to him like exactly what a Second Chance Cinema movie is. And I think I did a pretty good job. I said, you know, it's a movie that goes under the radar either by critics, it's a box office flop, but it's still got plenty of redeeming qualities. And I think even though we've had several iterations of how we've described that over the years, I think we've stayed pretty true to our mission since the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, we have the spreadsheet now, which tells us what the reviews were like, what the box office was like. And also, it's kind of one of those things where it's like first impressions, I think, is another thing that we haven't really introduced as much. But first impressions of things, I would go back all the way to the episode of The Village when that came out and everybody was looking at it. And we're all looking for the twist and realizing that the twist wasn't the most important thing about the movie. So your first impression might have been like, well, that twist sucked, so the movie sucked. And then it's like, no. Go back and revisit. Give a second chance to it because the movie is so much better on second impression.
If we had not come up with Second Chance Cinema, which I love, which flows off the tongue, Second Impression Cinema might have been another one. We could have abbreviated it SICK.
Oh.
But we landed on Second Chance Cinema, and here we are 5 years later. And in that time, we've doubled our listeners from probably 8 to 16, which is wonderful. And we appreciate every one of you. the bulk of you, which are probably our mothers and friends and such, but we're here.
You say this, I think it's in jest, but in the same instance, like, every time I look to see our listenership and our downloads and stuff like that, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, it's a lot of fools rush in. It's fools rush in is when we celebrate the people that go under the radar, right?
Like, sure.
Our Ben Affleck is still getting downloads. Our Bruce Willis blew up. Michael Bay. I feel like we don't need it, but, you know, a thank you letter from Michael Bay would be spectacular.
For Michael Bay or from Michael Bay? Because clearly making him way more popular than he already is.
I know.
So here we are, and we've picked a movie that has an appeal across the board. Well, at least it did until I watched it. I say that in jest because it's awesome. It's just such a departure from what I remember seeing it the first time. But the movie we're going to be talking about today is the Macaulay Culkin vehicle, 1993's The Good Son. The reason that we kind of chose this one, and correct me if I'm wrong, is because on our other podcast where we debate pop culture with our dear friends Jeremy and Rudy, round one of our elimination challenge is called The Good Son Round. And in the Good Son round, we have to eliminate a pick from our own list of nominations. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, go ahead and check out the Mount Rushmore podcast, podrushmore.podbean.com, also available in plenty of other places. And the reason we named it the Good Son round is because essentially what we have to do, spoiler alert, is throw one of our picks off the cliff while hanging on to the other ones. So we were joking around and we said, you know what, let's just kick off season four with the Good Son. So here we are.
I mean, it was on our list. It's funny how memorable it is and was. Like, we were talking about, you stopped by last night just to confirm this recording and everything like that. And I was like, man, there's a lot in this movie that was ingrained in my head. And it wasn't until I was watching the movie that I realized that I also read the novelization.
Oh, man.
Back in, like, high school.
You used the word ingrained, but I think watching it again, traumatized, might be a little bit more appropriate. Just in terms of the sinister turn from Macaulay Culkin. That was this the first movie after... So Home Alone was 1990. Home Alone 2 would have been, like, the year after, because it would have been a huge cash grab.
The trivia on this movie was, and, you know, in the delay of starting to record today, I was like, well, let me read about Kit Culkin, because I didn't know anything about his father, but it seemed like his father was like a star father.
Oh.
And his father wanted him on The Good Son so badly that he threatened to pull him from Home Alone 2 if he didn't get the part in The Good Son. Because of Home Alone, Macaulay Culkin had a lot of power in Hollywood, but he was a kid, so his father had a lot of power in Hollywood. His father used that power to get him into The Good Son.
So did it come out, like, what's the timeline of between the Home Alones and The Good Son?
So Home Alone, The Good Son, Home Alone 2.
Oh, so Home Alone 2 came out after The Good Son.
Or at least he acted in Home Alone 2 after The Good Son.
That's a different multiverse we live in now. That can't be right, because this was 93.
Yeah, yeah, and Home Alone 2 was 92.
Okay, so that makes more sense, because I would have to think it would be a boner move for a studio to put him in this movie and then try to market him again as Kevin McAllister.
Yeah, because there was another piece of trivia that this was his last movie that was successful until Saved in 2004.
I was going to say, Richie Rich didn't exactly blow up the box office, and I wonder if this was why. I wonder if people were just terrified of Macaulay Culkin after this. And rightly so. Before we get into our discussion, I'm so thrilled to be bringing back our most long-standing tradition on Second Chance Cinema, the Wheel of Poetry. Six different types of poetry that are on a large spinning wheel, a random spinning wheel. As we play the trailer for this movie, we are going to spin it, land on one, and then we have roughly that amount of time to write a poem in the style of whatever we're given. The choices are haiku, ABAB, limerick, acrostic, toast/roast, song parody, but also, I believe we added one at the end of last season, a quatrain, right? So it's seven now. And I kind of...
Are we going to, like, specify that it's a rhyming quatrain or just a quatrain?
A rhyming quatrain, sure. So we're going to go ahead and spin the wheel here, see what we land on, then we're going to play the trailer for 1993's ridiculous movie, The Good Son.
Thank you.
It's a good thing we explained this. Rhyming quatrain. I think this is our first quatrain, no?
Other than one random episode where one of us did it way back in the day.
Like accidentally?
Yeah, we started like, we were doing haikus. You were doing haikus. And then I was like, you know what? I want to try to do a haiku. And so then I did a haiku. And then you were like, well, I'm going to start doing limericks. And then we just threw everything at the wall and saw if it sticks. So one of us just wrote four lines and it was A-A-A-A, just four rhyming lines.
Look at us bringing out the best in each other. Quatrain is four lines and they all rhyme. It's actually pretty simple to explain. And in this case, they're all going to be about 1993's thriller, The Good Son.
You got 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
All right.
You know this one? Great big gobs of greasy, grimy gopher gut, mutilated monkey meat, chocolate little piggy feet, french fried eyeballs swimming in a pool of blood. That sure tastes good.
Henry, come on down here.
Behind his smile lies a secret.
Here, made two of them, so we could be brothers.
Hey, Mark, come on, let's go.
Where are we going?
Behind his eyes lies a plan.
Who is he? Mr. Highway. Wow. What are you going to do with him?
And behind the image of a good son.
Coming?
So what are you guys up to out there?
Sorry, Mom. Top secret. Where are we going?
We're here.
Lies the terrifying truth.
Say goodbye.
No!
Did you know you did? You could have killed people.
I feel sorry for you. I just don't know how to have fun.
What? You're a doctor. You know things.
Well, some things.
What if there was this boy? And he did these terrible things because he liked doing it.
Such a sweet little thing.
It'd be too bad if something were to happen to her. Would you say he was evil?
I don't believe in evil.
Should.
When innocence is just a mask.
Do you really think I'd hurt her?
You wouldn't.
Poor Mark. So violent.
When trust becomes a weapon, then anyone can become the next victim.
Henry.
No! Susan! If I let you go, you think you could fly?
Macaulay Culkin, The Good Son.
I remember that trailer vividly. It was one of the first times when you associate a person with a role to the point, because what, it was 93, so we would have been like 11, 12. So you associate a person with a role, it's so weird to see them not in that role. And I think Macaulay Culkin was probably the definitive example of that for us as kids. He was Kevin from Home Alone. So to see him in a trailer like this, where he's just evil, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. This is weird.
It was probably too early. Like, I understand, like, the philosophy behind, let's show off this kid's skill, right? Like, let's show off my son's skill. But in the same instance, it really was, we just got to know him in Home Alone and as Kevin. When was My Girl?
That's a good question. I don't know.
But yeah, so there's like three Macaulays, right? There's Home Alone Macaulay, there's My Girl Macaulay, and then there's The Good Son Macaulay.
Well, don't forget about the Page Master Macaulay.
I did.
It's okay.
But so it was probably too dark. But then you look at, you know, Drew Barrymore, and she went from E.T. to The Firestarter. And I wonder if that was kind of in Kit Culkin's head of like, I want my son to be the next Drew Barrymore. And Drew Barrymore's career also kind of slumped until Scream. And then she kind of got back onto the scene, I feel.
Does Macaulay Culkin have a talk show in which he just basically shits on the writers and crosses the picket lines? Also?
No.
Okay, well.
No. So he's doing better.
You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
These are our quatrains, our rhyming quatrains about The Good Son.
Back in the year of our Lord, 1993, I was a youngin' watching this movie, pretending it was Elijah Wood and Macaulay and me. At that sleepover, I would have woken up in pee.
I like how you said woken up in pee.
I wet the bed so much I made a waterbed.
Yeah, that was good. And that's the kind of openness and vulnerability we have here on Second Chance Cinema. We're down to talk about anything. Here's mine. Macaulay Culkin is Henry. On the surface, he wants to be friendly, behaves gently, and acts complimentary, but really, your evil worst enemy.
Nice.
Not bad.
Did you even have like a rhyme within a rhyme?
Well,
like a rhyme within the
line. I'm straight hip hop, like, bro.
There
you know
are.
That.
I guess, man.
All right, so let's get into this. First thing I want to talk about, I took notes for this one. I'm going to try to be a little bit more litigious. So the first thing that struck me was the opening title font. Did this bother you at all?
No.
So, you know how there are those memes going around where it's like somebody sends a really terse, intense email, but it's in like Comic Sans, so it looks like it's like a joke? That's exactly what this was. It wasn't Comic Sans, but it was some sort of really like gentle, rounded font that just did not fit with the motif of an evil, suspenseful movie. And right away, I was like, man, that's a really ambitious design choice. You're lulling me into the false sense of security. Maybe you think I haven't seen the trailer, and I think this is going to be a movie about, like, childhood best friends. I don't think it would have been hard. I think even on the poster, the good son is in this really sharp, angular, just really intense looking font. And then we have the opening
like
title
the
credits.
Omen.
We have the opening title credits that are just really goofy looking. They look like they were drawn in Microsoft Paint somehow.
I don't remember the opening titles. I do remember the roller coaster of emotion that like the first 5 minutes of the movie give you, because it's Serenity with her standing out in the middle of the desert, and then a soccer game, and then your mom died, and then just peaceful funeral, and then it is like a jolly jaunt through the mountains in a Jeep with the music being like da, 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 you know, and I was like, what is going, this is amazing.
So the whole,
and then he drives
the whole funeral scene. So wait, was that her at the beginning standing in front of the mountains?
I guess,
because I didn't get that, because her and Elijah Wood had the same hair, so all you saw was the silhouette, and I had no idea.
Oh yeah, and then there's a picture of her, and she's got like Nicole Kidman far and away hair. So you're right.
Yeah, so like...
With Days of Thunder hair.
Days of Thunder hair. Yeah, it starts off with this really weird scene of him just in the mountains. And it's basically a non sequitur, because then it just cuts to a soccer game. You don't know exactly who it is. You just know it's this figure in the mountains.
Which is, it's my least favorite part of the movie is the bookend, because he's back standing in the desert.
Where the fuck are those mountains? Do they tell you where those... Because what happens is, there's three things I wrote down about that opening scene was... Number one, your boy, David Morse, shows up playing Elijah Wood's father. Shout out to Major Tom Baxter from The Rock. He comes in and he's...
Yep. That's where he had to go for 2 weeks. Like, just go to Alcatraz. You'll be set. You'll never have to go somewhere again.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He had to close a deal, quote, in Tokyo. But really, it was a stop on the way to Tokyo, San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. That's the kind of crossover
that's
we
the
need.
Crossover.
Maybe there's a deleted scene in The Rock where he talks about his kid and his wife who just died. Oh, man, that's great. But he shows up, takes Elijah Wood from his soccer game, and it's very somber, and clearly there's something going on. He goes to the hospital. Elijah Wood goes in, sees his mother. We don't know exactly what's wrong, but she's clearly not well. And the last thing she says, or no, the last thing he says as they're talking is, "You're not going to die because I won't let you." Jump cut immediately to a funeral. It was almost like a Hot Shots or like a National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon cut, because he totally was like, just very much like, you're going to be fine, Mom, you're going to be fine. And then they might as well have played the funeral march like immediately during the jump cut. And then after the funeral, the last thing I wrote down was like, after they do the procession and everything, he walks sort of to the funeral gates, walks out, and it's another like picturesque canyon mountain range, and it's like, did she get buried in the Grand Canyon? Like, what was going on there? I just did
the location
not...
scouters definitely did their job on this movie.
I mean, it was beautiful, but it was also unnecessary, dare I say. I don't quite understand the choice there, and the blocking and the cinematography necessary for him to be in this picturesque desert. But anyway, he is then told that his dad has to, like we said, go hijack Alcatraz Island. So he's going to go stay with his cousin and his father's brother and wife and their whole family. One of the things that I noticed as they were on their drive, did we ever decide where it was that he went? Where did the cousins live?
They're in Maine.
Maine. It was Maine. Okay. Maybe that's why they did it, to assume that it was like a cross-country trip from the west to the northeast.
According to Wikipedia, they start in Arizona.
Okay. So a lot of father-son bonding time. Then there's a part where they're driving. Elijah Wood's playing his Game Boy like a little dick, And the dad kind of gets on him about it and says, you know, this could be a really good time for us to bond, and there's tension and stuff. And then I forget why the dad even stops the car, but somehow he does. And Elijah Wood just jumps out and runs. But he doesn't run anywhere except out into the desert. I feel like if I was a dad, I might have just stayed in the car and been like,
he did.
And been like, you know, I can see you. I can see where you're going. There's nothing there.
Well, that was like the first choice that I was like, I get it. Because when Elijah Wood got out and ran, I was like, where are you going to go, bro?
Right.
Like, you're going to figure this out eventually.
Right.
I was like, so if Tom Baxter goes running after him, I was like, that seems like a silly decision. But Elijah just runs and then stops and then stares and then dramatic fade out. So I was like, ooh, I like this because that's a choice that agrees with me, where I'm looking for reasons to be like, I don't like this.
I mean, it would have been great, too, if he, like, ran out and got so tired and thirsty or whatever that he had to tuck his tail and come back to the car. And Tom Baxter was just like, see, dummy, you're in the fucking
desert. I was expecting that, like, dramatic scene of, like, the father racing after him and then picking him up around the midsection, you know, and, like, and him being like, no, let me go, let me go.
Well, that happens later.
Back.
That happens later with his uncle.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then they end up in Maine and we're thrown right into the world of Henry. The evil world of Macaulay Culkin's Henry.
Who's very good at arts and crafts.
What was the arts and crafts he was making?
Well, the first thing was his paper mache mask.
Oh, right.
I was like, oh,
yeah.
His paper mache is a bitch.
He hangs over the stairway with his makeshift Michael Myers mask. And then he comes downstairs and says, hey, I made one for you too, buddy.
I try to look to see if they were the drama and comedy masks. You know, like if he made one with a happy face and one with a frowny face.
Interesting. I think he was just so shitty at paper mache, it was hard to tell.
And they like were so close and staring at each other in such an awkward moment that I didn't want to stare with them.
It was a very strange first interaction because, well, obviously if you've seen the trailer, you know that Macaulay Culkin is evil and sinister. But if you hadn't seen the trailer, you know that there's something off. There was a vibe. There was a vibe, number one, that he hung himself over the stairs looking in his creepy mask. But then also just the conversations that they would have, there was definitely kind of a vibe between the innocence and kind of vulnerability of Elijah Wood and then just this weird authoritarian almost sense from Macaulay Culkin. But they gradually start to get more and more chummy. The one thing that I thought was weird was how they, like, flirted isn't the right word, but how they endeared themselves to each other by kicking each other under the table. That doesn't seem fun to me. Did you do that as a kid? Like, if you were had a sleepover with your friend and you're all eating dinner, were you like, hey, you're my friend, kick?
No, but I see my students do it all the time.
Okay, maybe.
You know, like, and my students will punch each other and then tell on each other. And I'm like, all right, well, just avoid that kid today. And then they will go back to playing. And I'm like, what's the point of all of that? So
I guess maybe like ball taps I get. Like that was more of a college thing. Maybe this is like a maybe.
Which probably hurts more than heel to shin.
Right. But it's more humiliating. And then therefore it's more bonding. But I suppose when you're like a 10-year-old kid or however old he was, that doesn't get in your radar.
And I remember lining up to go back inside from recess and everybody like Pillsbury-ing each other, you know, where you take your two fingers and pop somebody right in the stomach.
Oh, I didn't do that. I don't remember that.
And that was a Holly Lane.
Must have been. I don't remember that. So yeah, they start showing evidence that they're going to be pals. And then shit gets real and there becomes quite a bit to unpack. We learn through some exposition that there's a sister who I'm assuming was Macaulay Culkin's real sister, the little sister. Yeah.
Because I was like, oh my gosh, look at this casting. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's amazing. And then, yeah, no, that's Kit Culkin saying, put all my kids in this movie.
Right. So she's kind of the classic little sister who wants to be in on things, but she's annoying and they don't want her there. And normally, you know, you'd tell your mom and there would be a family lesson or something like that. And there'd be a compromise and you'd end things, you know, amicably. Instead, Macaulay Culkin throws her into a lake, which we'll get to later. But we also learn the mom and the dad, the mom being the mom from the Santa Claus, which we discussed last night. The dad being one half of one of my favorite shows when I was a kid, Hardcastle and McCormick. They're all seemingly doing pretty well. Mark, who's Elijah Wood, is adjusting. Henry is still not on anyone's radar in terms of being an evil little shit. And so things are good. But then slowly we get evidence of Henry's nefariousness, in the sense of, and I wrote this down, I think in order, is the first thing he does pull out the cigarette?
No.
What was the first thing then?
So I do want to address one thing, because they, the writers of the movie, or like the brains behind the movie, were talking about The Omen. And The Omen is about
clearly
a kid that is Satan. And they're saying, you can't have evil kids in movies, or we never had evil kids. And if a kid is bad in a movie, he's evil. Like, you can't just have sociopathic kids. You can't have Dahmer as a kid. And so that's what they were going for with this movie, was that Culkin wasn't evil. He was a sociopath. He just had no emotions, or he had no empathy with other people. And so watching this movie, I was very intrigued by how they approached that theory of a psychopath in 10-year-old form, and then was watching like Culkin's performance with it. But the first thing he does is take him up to the treehouse.
In
the movie, it seems like a mistake.
I wrote it right here.
In the book, if you read the novelization and what I remember from it, and why I was like, ooh, I think I like novelizations of movies, because they get into the character's mind, and they get into the character's decision-making processes instead of just like maybe a cocked eyebrow on screen. It says what Henry is like thinking and planning. And going up to the treehouse, he knew he was going to go past the branch that was going to snap and fall off and get into the treehouse. But he also knew that Elijah Wood's character would try to use the branch and that would snap, and Mark would need Macaulay to bring him up to the treehouse. And that's where you get the line of, if I let you go, do you think you could fly?
If I let you go, do you think you could fly? What the fuck?
If I let you go, you think you could fly?
And he's just peering over the edge of the treehouse, like not offering a hand, not, you know, oh shit, this human being is about to fall. Just sitting there, arms crossed, looking at him. If I let you go, do you think you could fly?
And the amazing thing is, with the careers that these two are going to have, Elijah Wood and Macaulay Culkin, I think the movie really hurt Macaulay Culkin's career. And I think Elijah Wood turns in one of the best performances of his career. Because when he is dangling from that treehouse and looking up, and Macaulay is just looking down at him with no empathy whatsoever, Elijah Wood's like fear face in this movie, and him being like, help, you know, and just like barely able to get it out. Elijah dangles a lot in this
movie. He sure does.
And he has to do that emotion of, oh my gosh, I'm about to fall to my death, so well in it. And so that this is your first taste of Elijah Wood, because before this, you get a petulant child just, you know, playing his Game Boy and ignoring his father who's about to take over Alcatraz. So, yes, that's your first taste of bad Macaulay, really good acting from Elijah.
That we're roping Major Tom Baxter's character into this makes it so much better. But then we get into the cigarette, which I had completely forgotten about, and audibly laughed when he did that. I laughed and was probably just like, what the hell? Because he has this little box of, I don't know if there's even anything else in it that we saw, but he just...
Lighter.
Lighter. Yeah, he opens it up, just pulls out a cigarette, and as a 10-year-old, just lights up a cigarette. It's such a weird thing to watch. And he does it like he's like a fucking convict.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his mannerisms are so good in that whole, like, just taking a hit of it. It seems like he's done it before. And it's Macaulay Culkin, so I don't want to pass judgment on that. Maybe he has done it before, practiced a lot. The weird thing is, they said, they're like, don't worry, the cigarette was filled with, like, lettuce leaves and something else. And I was like, regardless, whatever was in that rolled up piece of paper, no kid should be inhaling it into their lungs. And they did a pretty good job of showing that they did inhale something into at least their mouth, and then Elijah Wood...
Oh, he smoked that thing.
Yeah.
I don't
like,
know.
If regardless if it's tobacco, like maybe the nicotine, like give him an American Spirit. I don't care. Like if there's no addictive nicotine or whatever, but like they're like, oh, it was like lettuce and chili pepper. And
it's like, that doesn't sound any better. Like smoking lettuce and chili pepper doesn't sound much better.
Let me see if I can not get the exact recipe for a Macaulay Culkin cigarette.
They didn't really have too many special effects in that movie other than Mr. Highway, so you would think they might be able to digitally render a cigarette, use a little bit of the SFX budget, but no, I guess not.
It was an empty tube filled with dried parsley and lettuce leaves.
That doesn't make any sense.
Go on. Well, they give you cancer. Who cares? You're gonna die anyway.
I really thought the gloves with the fingertips cut out, super cool.
Oh, yeah. Those were Home Alone chic because Joe Pesci had those the whole time in Home Alone. I remember. Yeah, those were badass.
Did you see your mom after she was dead?
I wanted to.
But they wouldn't let me. You should have made them let you. It's very important. See, people don't like to talk about death. So that's why you have to investigate. It's scientific.
It doesn't feel like that.
What'd your mom look like last time we saw her?
Kind of pale.
I took a real good look when my kid brother Richard drowned in the bathtub.
And then after the cigarette, we get introduced to probably my favorite part of the movie, Mr. Highway. And there's a few reasons I like Mr. Highway. Number one, because his name's Mr. Highway. And because Elijah Wood says a couple times, where are we going? What are we doing? With a big giant dummy called Mr. Highway. And then even when they get on top of the bridge, overlooking the highway, Elijah Wood still has no idea what's about to happen. Not the sharpest tool in the shed, I don't think. I feel like even as a 10-year-old, I would have been able to connect the dots.
Yes, but would you convince yourself that you were just not thinking?
That I was overreacting?
Like, well, we're obviously not going to do that, right? Like, maybe we're just going to sit up there with him and pretend like we're all smoking cigarettes or something. Like, you know, like, you wouldn't think the worst case scenario.
Like, I couldn't believe, it wouldn't even cross my mind to believe that that could be the end game here.
Yeah.
Possibly. I will give you that. What I loved about Mr. Highway, though, was that what they eventually did, which was setting him on top of the bridge and then dropping him off into traffic, caused what I believe to be the longest car wreck scene in movie history. Did you notice this?
Yes,
it took until
Final Destination.
Not even. I wrote this was longer than Bad Boys 2, like when they're throwing the cars off the truck in Bad Boys 2. Final Destination, maybe. I didn't consider that one, but we ultimately learn it was a 10-car pileup that took, no joke, probably about 17 minutes. That was a joke, but it took quite a long time to the point where it was just like car after car after car. It almost became like slapsticky. And then later that night on the news, they have the nerve to say, thank God nobody was seriously injured. This 10-car pileup. That's actually like Bad Boys 2 also, after they're throwing cars and bodies and stuff on the highway. And there's a throwaway line where Joe Pantoliano's like, thank God no cops were hurt. It's like, yeah, wow, that's really lucky.
And this is the scene that's edited out of some country's viewing of it.
Oh, really?
Because they're worried that kids are going to emulate it. And really...
Oh, like the program?
This is, yeah, yeah. And like this one is where it's not from this movie, but there was an instance, and I'm sure it's all over the country, but there was a local instance where kids threw a rock off of a highway overpass and it shattered the windshield of somebody's car and they crashed and were seriously injured.
Oh.
Where now, like every time I drive under an overpass, I'll probably start thinking about the good stuff. Because we revisited this, but I'm always like, look, if somebody is on that overpass, I'm like, oh God, like, don't do anything to me, you know, I'm like, don't throw anything off. And apparently there was two kids that threw a dummy off an overpass and caused an accident at some point in history, and they're like, it could have been inspired by this movie.
Interesting.
But there's no proof of it. So yeah, kids are dumb, and so if you put psychopath kids on film, people might try to emulate it.
The last time I saw something similar was a guy standing on an overpass with a stop the steal flag. So in that case, the dummy was on the overpass and stayed on the overpass. But that was before I rewatched The Good Son. So maybe I will have similar PTSD. But then
now you could like look up and be like, oh, there's Mr. Highway.
Yeah, Mr. Highway. But then Elijah Wood says, I didn't know you were going to do that. And again, I go back to, well, at what point did you not know he was going to do that? Was it when he propped him up on the edge of the thing, or when he was like timing the cars? When did you not realize?
I think what I love, though, about Macaulay's character and performance in this movie is, regardless of how adult his intentions and his actions are, every time he has like a monologue that's very kid-like, even when they like sat up on the thing, he gives this Calvin and Hobbes type recitation of, poor Mr. Highwayman, yeah. You know, like, and just goes into this little story.
Come on, Mr. Highway, take a look.
Poor Mr. Highway. He's thinking about the end. He's had enough of this terrible life.
What?
Say goodbye.
No!
Even when he's like play sword fighting with himself, you're like, oh yeah, sword fights. I used to pretend like I was Donatello with my bow staff and fighting crime and whatnot. And he would pin his imaginary foe up against the railing, stab him with the sword, and then like kick him off the edge of his blade and then continue on. And I'm like, wow, that's very violent for a kid this age. But every single time he's about to do something bad, he has this like mini little speech justifying it.
He's very much like a villain with his monologues. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's very much an evil villain. And he turns heel so fast. Like, he turns from just kind of like what you might call a tweener, like, is he good, is he bad, is he misunderstood, to just, he's straight up evil pretty fast. And there's an early scene where they're fighting, and I think the dad comes and breaks it up or something like that. And I remember the fighting being just so incredibly awkward.
Because they're so close?
And they weren't punching each other. They were just sort of like shoving back and forth. It was like when two Roombas run into each other. That's what it, that's what it reminded me of.
And they just both had like handfuls of each other's hair.
Right.
And were like pulling it back.
Because you can't exactly get like Donnie Yen to choreograph a fight between two 10-year-olds, I don't think.
And that was the weird thing with like his sister. I never understood the intentions with the sister because he was like, let's play hide and seek when they're watching themselves, right? Parents went on date night or something like that. And it's two seekers and the sister. And he's like, I bet I find her first. And they go off into the dark house to find the sister. And then he's just tickling her at the end. And like Elijah's like, we're done. Let me go read you a story. And Macaulay just sits there and then puts the flashlight around the room. And I was like, but he was just tickling her. So
he's got Elijah Wood has this sense. He's got the sixth sense of evil, I think. Here's what it is. He knows something's up. Something's not right. I don't remember where this was. I guess maybe my notes are a little more scattered, but there was a scene where Macaulay Culkin is talking to Elijah Wood and he says, do you think you're evil because you let your mom die? And I just wrote, what the fuck? What person says that? What 10-year-old says that?
Was that Macaulay or was that his like weird shrink friend thing that they like, do you want him to talk to a therapist? It might help. And it's the mom saying that.
No,
right?
It's the doctor. You're right. It was the doctor who said that. Yeah, the shitty psychiatrist. She was so terrible. As someone who's seen probably more than a dozen psychiatrists in my life, along with a dozen other therapists and psychologists and stuff, she was completely ineffectual. She was terrible.
Well, and it's definitely the pot calling the kettle black because Susan also really needed to talk to a grief counselor.
Oh my God. Yeah, we haven't even talked about that. So there was a third child who we learn was the family's youngest son, Richard, who died mysteriously in the bathtub, drowned in the bathtub. I don't remember if they said how old he is or was. But you're right, the mom is consumed by grief, and it's all kind of the classic things where she doesn't want to do anything to his room. She just isn't ready to move on. And throughout the movie, you're getting these little hints that it was possibly Henry, Macaulay Culkin, who murdered the little brother. And I don't think they ever actually confirm it, although they do have an interaction where she says straight up, and props to her, she says, Henry, did you kill Richard? And he just goes, what if I did? And again, you're just like, what the hell?
I know. When he took the rubber ducky, and that's what she finds. And right. He's like, well, it was mine first.
Right, yeah. And man, there's just no, like, the thing with villains is that there has to be, for a good villain, there has to be some degree of sympathy. Like, for the Joker, you know, you don't completely disagree with his idea that people will turn on each other if it serves them. Like Max Cady in Cape Fear. Terrible, awful, vile person, but he wasn't wrong in being angry for years that his attorney basically lied to get him put in prison. Yeah. So there's justification. With Macaulay Culkin, and justification, whether or not it's agreeable, is not necessarily up for debate, but they have a motive. They have this purpose. Ed Harris and The Rock, since we're talking about The Rock, perfect example. He was 100% right in his gripe with what was going on.
Billy Zane in Titanic. It's just a sign of the times.
Sure. We'll throw another Titanic reference in there. But Macaulay Culkin, just pure evil. And so I wonder if that's maybe what was so off-putting, both in a good way and in kind of a more ridiculous way, was that there wasn't... I would have loved to have a scene where he breaks down or something and says, like, you loved Richard more than me, you ignored me when Richard was born, you abandoned me when Richard was born. Like, that would have been a stretch that would have given him some background, some motive, instead of just being possessed by the devil or whatever he is.
I mean, it could have been, like, really simple, considering the fact that they've already planted that mom can slap a child across the face. And so you just say, like, maybe Macaulay was having a rough day and he wanted love and she focused on Richard, and because he was annoying her, she slapped him across
the face. Well, she has no problem slapping her nephew across the face.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Don't you lie to me.
That was some Uncle Frank shit. That was like, look what you did, you little jerk. Like, if I got wind of that I don't have kids, but if my sister-in-law through marriage slapped my kid, I'd probably be like, hey, we need to talk about this.
But there was some questionable decision making, knowing that Susan wasn't over the death of Richard, to be like, you know what would be a good house for my son is this house that just lost a kid.
True.
Everybody's kind of fucked up in like their thinking process when it comes to putting Elijah Wood in this house. The only like truly innocent two, I would say, is Dad and the little sister.
Speaking of the little sister, she gets it pretty bad. She goes for a nice time ice skating with her cousin and her brother, and then her brother does a crack the whip and throws her onto thin ice, and immediately, which was a pretty suspenseful scene, where she lands on it and you see the first little crack, and then she stands up and falls straight through the ice, and you're just like, oh. That to me, like, for some reason, when that happens in other movies, the cold factor of it, like the sense of cold and freezing, doesn't really hit me. With that one, it did. I was like, oh, that little girl, she's so cold, she's freezing, she's gonna die, get her out. And then what I thought was funny was these like two or three dudes come to the rescue after about a good like 2 minutes. So they took their time, but they all had axes, giant axes, that's for some reason they brought with them to the ice skating rink. Now, I realized they were probably like in the trunk of their cars and stuff, and maybe they were woodsmen or lumberjacks or something like that. I just thought it was pretty funny to have these two or three guys rush onto the ice who probably weigh combined at least five times as much as that little girl. Nothing happened to them, but they were all just wielding these giant axes.
Well, and like, that's because she's just floating under the surface. I was like, oh, like, you got to do what you got to do. But how do you know, like, you're not going to just
fall through also?
Bury the blade in her.
Oh, underneath. Yeah.
Yeah, like, one good, like, good swipe. But I like how they show Macaulay just, like, laying there, just fascinated, you know?
Yeah.
With the process of trying to save his sister.
Yeah, and that's a classic sociopath thing, too. That gave me Dahmer vibes. There were definitely Dahmer vibes here. No cannibalism and no evidence of, like, deviancy other than just being evil, but he had that like blank stare kind of thing going on. And the lumberjack guys just kind of, I'm glad they were there, very glad they were there. But I was a little confused as to why they had these axes so readily available.
Have you ever ice skated on a frozen pond?
Fuck no. Have you?
No, but I might add that to my list.
Oh, be careful, dude.
But I'm also curious, because if you do have a thing, because it was like a town gathering place, right? Like, let's all go skate on this ice. And then they're like, well, don't skate over here because that's thin ice. We're going to put caution tape over there. Is that one of the things that they just have at the ticket booth of axes in case somebody falls in the ice and then floats underneath?
Maybe.
Like, I wonder...
like how lifeguards have those buoys and the Baywatch things that they carry with them.
Yeah, or that buildings back in the day used to have axes behind glass. I don't know why. Like, they just trusted us to be firemen all of a sudden if the building caught on fire.
Yeah, that's pretty. But in case of emergency, break glass and do what?
Yeah. Right, and there's a fire hose too. Like, I'm just gonna figure this shit out. Like, I could barely the extinguisher. I feel like is pretty complicated for
that's
me.
Funny. In case of emergency, break glass. Here's a giant axe. Go fight the fire with it. So after that, they take her to the hospital. She's fine, all that. But then we get into a dialogue where we get our best moment, our best line of the entire movie, which is...
Hey, Mark, don't fuck with
me. Hey, Mark, don't fuck with me.
Sure missed an interesting session. I like therapy.
What did you tell her?
Sorry, it's strictly confidential. But you better stop telling lies about me, because no one's going to believe you.
Sooner or later, they're going to find out about you.
Who's they? My dad? My mom?
I told your mom.
Why would she believe you? She's my mom, not yours.
You know you're wrong about that. She is my mother.
Your mom? You crazy? Your mom's maggot food.
My mom said she'd always be with me. She chose your mom as a way of coming back. But I guess you wouldn't understand that. But it's true. She's my mother now.
Hey, Mark. Don't fuck with me.
I really do wish that somebody, and maybe they have, would do a supercut of that with Home Alone, where instead of saying, you guys give up, are you thirsty for more? He just says, don't fuck with me, after he, like, smashes him with a paint can. Because that line, that and the cigarette, made Macaulay Culkin so much older, a more seasoned evil than a 10-year-old should be.
You're nailing it. Those are the parts that studios should have looked at and went, oh, we could do so much more with this. Listen, you know, it could be like a Dakota Fanning type progression.
See,
Haley Joel Osment.
Did kids just get to be better, more deep actors later on, or was it all just in the direction? Because, like, I can't remember a performance of a kid from, like, the early 90s or the 80s or anything that was, like, on par with some of the kid actors that we have seen since.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it's a thinker.
I think we're going to get into a lot more. I just went to my niece's high school soccer game, and the dance team did a performance at halftime or whatever, and that dance team was far and away better than anything we put on the Green and White Review talent show stage back in the late 90s. But it's because of this TikTok and everybody, like, acting and performing for the camera now. You know, they're doing it every single day, and they're doing special effects, and they know green screen and stuff like that. Like, the kids nowadays are so much more advanced in entertainment and entertaining with their influencer bullshit. Like, I don't necessarily buy into it all, but the dancing, the acting, the performing, the lying, the special effects, kids are far and away better today. And I think it's just a natural kind of...
It's an evolution.
It's an evolution, because I just watched The Kid with Charlie Chaplin.
Not the Bruce Willis one?
Not the Bruce Willis one, but The Kid with Charlie Chaplin is my favorite silent film of all time. That kid in there, whose name last name is Coogan, because he then... His grandson was Keith Coogan from, like,
Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
But his performance in that, I think, is one of the greatest child performances of all time. I don't know of another one until you get to Drew Barrymore in E.T. And then you don't hear one until Macaulay Culkin. And then, like we were saying, with Haley Joel Osment, Dakota Fanning, I think it's got to be one of those just natural gifts and talents that come about once, maybe twice in a generation. And nowadays, we're going to be inundated with them because Disney Channel and all that jazz.
So we get to the end. And the end, after the mom confronts Henry and Mark tries desperately to warn everybody. Of course, the dad doesn't believe him, says you're crazy. It's a very classic, like, my kid is an angel. The teacher must be at fault. My kid would never do anything bad. It's classic one of those.
If you saw it from the dad's point of view, like, when he walked in, in and Elijah's got the blade
Fair.
To Macaulay's throat. Like,
yeah.
Everything that the dad is saying, like, it's like, Jesus, this fucking
true, but also, rocket. Let's not forget, I mean, you and I both know that there's often more to the story. So he just jumps right on the, oh, my little angel would never do anything like that bandwagon. And then Henry escapes the house, goes to sort of follow his mom to her spot where she goes and meditates and reminisces about Richard, which is just happens to be at the end of the cliff. It's like if the mom would have picked a garden or something, this would have been no problem. But she goes to this edge of the cliff. Mark sees this from the window, throws a chair through the window, breaks the window, escapes through the window. In pursuit are the stupid old therapist and the dad. Somehow they can't catch him, the logistics of which I'll get into in a minute. But we end up with our final showdown at the cliff between Mark and Henry, with the mom being placed in probably the most precarious and terrible situation ever in a movie, having to choose which child to drop off of a cliff. Now, two questions here. Number one, it took Elijah Wood all of 20 seconds to run to that cliff, maybe a minute if we're accounting for editing. How did the dad and the therapist not make it there in time to help out with this situation?
That's a flaw.
I mean, they were in pursuit as he was running for, again, all of, we'll say, I'll be generous, all of 5 minutes. Maybe it took him 5 minutes to get there, but they couldn't keep up for those 5 minutes through the woods that they know better than him.
I'm going to write between the lines
okay.
and just say that the therapist had like an up moment where she just collapsed because she's not used to running
okay.
through the cold weather, and the father had to tend to
I
her
see.
And, you know.
I like that. A deleted scene that maybe okay. we don't know about.
Yeah.
So then we get to our final showdown, which you don't see a lot of final showdowns between child, and mother, but this was it, and it defies explanation. It really does. Because
it's definitely the 90s version of Sophie's Choice.
Right. But in Sophie's Choice, was the child dropped off of a cliff?
No. In Sophie's Choice, she let somebody else do the dirty work.
Right.
In this one, she had to.
In Sophie's Choice, the mother does not actively let go of one child to hold on to the other child and watch as the first child falls onto a rock and then gets swept into the ocean.
Mom, I love you.
In the bloody ocean. I was like, wow, they really just went like, oh, don't look away from this child death.
To be fair, when we're talking about on-screen deaths, Macaulay Culkin has some of the best. Between My Girl mm-hmm. and this, he's definitely in the upper echelons of on-screen deaths. And it's a sample that we play on Rushmore quite a bit, but the whole, Mom, I love you. I love you. Mom, I love you. See, that part to me was, that was a missed opportunity because they could have really elevated the tension there with him really just going for it emotionally, like fake crying, being like, I'm sorry for what I did. Richard, I loved him. I just didn't know what to do and blah, blah, blah. And since Mark got here, he's been, you know, I've been different because of him. He's not right. He really could have sold it.
Mm.
But instead, it was just this deadpan, Mom, I love you. I love you.
Well, and he also was like instigating Mark's death, you know, because he was like, Mom, I need your other hand.
Right.
Your other hand, Mom. And really, did he? Because all you saw was Mark slipping.
Right. Well, that was the other thing, too, was Mark was grabbing on like a jackass. Like, he could have, he was just dead weight. He was just hanging with one hand, dead weighting it completely. Like, the trick you do when, you know, like, when you don't want somebody to pick you up, you just drop your knees and dead weight it. He didn't use his other hand to try and grab. He didn't try to grab her sleeve. He didn't do anything. He wasn't helping out at all. So.
Well, and it's very quickly, but it's touch and go whether she's going to be able to save Mark after she drops Henry. Like, I was like, what if she drops Henry and then just goes like, fuck, I didn't have enough power for Mark.
Oh, yeah,
just kills both children.
The surprise ending, the shock ending, the alternate ending would be where she drops them both. That would be just messed up. But my question, assuming the dad and the therapist aren't dead in the woods, when they get to the cliff, how do you explain what just happened? right?
Yes.
She's like, so. Well, and that's. She's probably like, calm down. Let's back this up.
Oh my gosh. If she was traumatized before.
Yeah.
And now she has to go and talk to the worst therapist in Maine.
Yeah.
To try and like.
Like
get over
the only
this.
Therapist in Maine, it seems like. Like Jeff Daniels in Arachnophobia. Like she's the town therapist. That's all there is.
Yeah. And if they got there, they could have saved both kids.
Yeah.
So she's going to blame the husband.
Like, it reminds me of Jurassic Park. Jeremy and I always used to joke, like, so what did the kids tell their parents when they came back from their weekend with grandpa? Like,
yeah.
Like, so hey, kids, how was your weekend with grandpa? And they just both piss their pants and they can't sleep for 5 days.
Because essentially, dad's only gone for 2 weeks.
Right.
This all happens within like
within two weeks. Right? Yeah. So yeah, then what is the relationship with the dad and the brother like after that? And the sister-in-law? There needs to be a sequel, or at least a like an epilogue.
Like a little fanfic. And Macaulay's always down for like fanfic.
Yeah, he's really leaning into the Home Alone stuff with like the Google commercial and all that. He needs to lean back into Henry. Although Henry's dead, but maybe not.
Maybe he's just got swept away. And
maybe Henry fell into like a Lazarus pit and he died, but then he came back. So, yeah.
Or you just do Good Son too and just make him pure evil and undead.
Oh, and he just comes back from the dead. Yeah, that would be awesome.
I didn't mean to cause any trouble.
It's not your fault, Henry. Mark is going through some difficult things.
Is he okay?
What do you mean?
Maybe I shouldn't say anything. But the way he acts when nobody's around. Dr. Davenport, he scares me sometimes.
What do you say we do our five questions? This is a...
Okay.
Sort of fairly, it's not super new. We won't say that. Not super new segment, but this is a segment that we're going to keep going with in season four where we Google the Good Son and we are given five questions that people also ask. And since Spro is our resident film expert, he's going to see how he does. Okay? You ready?
Yes.
Number one, is the Good Son movie based on a true story?
No. But it wasn't released theatrically in London because at the time there was a case. James Bulger was a 2-year-old that was abducted from the mall by 2 10-year-olds and mutilated and killed. So because that was so recent, they were like, we're not going to show this movie about 2 10-year-old boys causing havoc.
Well, that's a nice, light, fun bit of trivia. Thank you. Great.
Yeah,
question two, what happens at the end of The Good Son?
The very end is my least favorite part. Elijah Wood is back in the desert, all alone without parental supervision, asking himself whether or not Susan, if she had to make the choice again, would she make the same one?
Yeah, that's just something you don't want to think about. It's kind of just like count your lucky stars. She didn't drop you off the cliff and maybe get her a nice Christmas gift. All right, question three. Who is the villain in The Good Son?
Macaulay Culkin.
I think that's pretty obvious. I don't think that's a open to interpretation question. Like, well, the villain was negligence, or the villain was, you know, the villain was too much love or something like that. No, Macaulay Culkin's pretty much the bastard villain.
Yes.
What is The Good Son rated R for?
Probably terror, because there's not a whole lot of blood. There's one curse word, which you could usually get away with PG-13. I would say it is the thought that maybe kids might emulate this if we allow them to see it.
So it says, although the content of this film really is more PG-13 than R, this one is one of the few times... Oh, this is just somebody writing Common Sense Media. Strictly because of the theme of Culkin being a teenaged murderer. Mm-hmm. I'd say that so, does it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although not even teenage, right? They were like 10.
Yeah.
So, okay, that was question four. Question five. Yeah. This is a good one, Spro. Why can't kids watch rated R?
For a variety of reasons, but I would say essentially we need children to just be children and not worry about adult things. And so if we can keep them not necessarily in their innocence, but making up the world around them in their best and brightest of ways, then we can keep them from having anxiety about the world that they're going to face when they get to our level.
That's really nice. So don't let your kids watch The Good Son is what you're saying.
Correct. Let them watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Small Soldiers.
There we go. That's awesome. All right. Final thoughts on The Good Son, Spro.
I think it's a great performance by Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood. If you like either of those actors or both of them, I think you're going to greatly enjoy. If you've never seen this movie, you got to give it a watch at least once. And it's currently streaming on Hulu. I don't know when this episode is going to go up, but currently streaming on Hulu. So it is a nice, tight 90 minutes. So I cannot recommend it enough. And I'm so happy to be back with you, my friend.
Likewise. If we were dangling over the edge of a cliff and one of our moms was with the choice, I would say, you know what? Keep Spro. And then just jump back like Black Widow in Infinity War. Be like, Spro deserves it. I would say that this movie is a compelling watch. It's a disturbing watch, but it is also a movie you will never see anything like ever again. 100%.
That's an interesting question, because when you were like, if both of us were dangling over the cliff, for whatever reason, I pictured Rudy was the one that was like the decision maker.
Oh, he'd let us both go.
Morph!
Harry?
Why the hell did you take your shoes off?
Why the hell are you dressed like a chicken?
I'm up here, you morons! Come and get me!
Don't fuck with me.
So we did it. Episode 1 of Second Chance Cinema. We are back with a vengeance, and we've got some good stuff planned for this season. So do yourself a favor, subscribe. Please download the episodes. Even if you just listen to it, go back and click the download button. You can delete the download right after that, but it helps with numbers. Follow us on Instagram at 2ndchancecinema. We're going to try to do better updating that and making you laugh and things of that nature. In the meantime, if you happen to have a small cousin who you think might be evil, run with that suspicion. Explore it. Find evidence. Build a case so that nothing like this ever happens to anyone again. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Thank you for joining us on Second Chance Cinema. I love you, Spro, and we will talk to you guys later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Second Chance Cinema. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or would like to recommend a movie for a future show, you could reach us at secondchancecinema@gmail.com. That's 2ndchancecinema@gmail.com. We have a Second Chance Cinema Facebook group. You could find us on Twitter at MCNSPro or check us out on Instagram at 2ndchancecinema. To help our little show out, please tell your friends about us. Leave a review wherever you listen, and be sure to subscribe and download each episode you listen to, as those simple steps makes us much more visible in the universe, which makes these fine secret cinematic masterpieces more visible. And isn't that really the whole point? Now go on and have a beautiful day, you wonderful person, you. And if it's not a beautiful day outside, stay in and rediscover a gem from the past.